Namaste, friends. Another Sunday, 8 p.m. Indian Standard Time, and we are back with your popular program, Words of Wisdom, Gyan Ganga, on our Virat Hindustan's Sangam's various social media channels. Today, we have an important discussion and a very interesting developing story, or call it a situation which we Hindus are facing not only in India but across the globe. And the topic of today is the objective and strategy of opponents of Hindutva, and is there a remedy? That is the topic we'll be discussing in the next 45 minutes with Dr. Subramanian Swamy and our panels. So a very interesting topic, because we see daily reports, in spite of a Hindutva government in power, lot of reports from various parts of India and even places where the central government writ lies, that we have seen this assault on Hindutva. And also across the globe, numerous situations, whether it is in Pakistan, whether it is in Bangladesh, or whether it is in the United Kingdoms or USA, this is a developing situation. So we have with us Dr. Swamy. I have to thank my co-host, Professor Arvind Chaturvedi from New Delhi, and Sri Ramesh Swamy for hosting this program with us every Sunday. And as you know, we have viewers across the globe in more than 120 countries which watch our program, which is on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Periscope, Spaces, and some audio video channels which we carry on every Sunday. You can always go back to YouTube and go to the Virat Hindustan Sangam section and hear this program or all our past episode. Today's episode is 173. So I have to thank our technical team led by Ashish Shetty, Ishwar Iyer, Swaminathan, Tejas Navalgul, Rakesh Gadgi, Ajesh Nair, and Vishal Mehta for their support to put this program together. Today I am in Madikeri in Kodagu district of Karnataka, and I have to thank our local host who have arranged for this internet connectivity, that is Mr. Nachappa Kodwa of CNC and Vijendra Shetty of the VHS Karnataka team, for me making me able to do this telecast to you directly from Madikeri. With this, it will be over to Dr. Swamy to start this discussion, the objective and strategy of opponents of Hindutva, and is there a remedy? Over to Dr. Swamy.
Thank you very much, Jagdish. This is a developing topic and of a phenomenon which had not been witnessed earlier. I remember in the 60s and later on frequently of my visits to the United States, till about 2004-2005, I did not hear anything but good things about Indians, and particularly the Hindu community. And many of them had done extremely well. Some of us had become professors and so on in very reputed universities. But from that, somewhere around that time, I noticed that there were, new developments somehow. I never figured out at that time what the forces were, to see that that Hindutva doesn't get traction. And that time the UPA was in power, and I'm 100% certain that the UPA spent a lot of money in the United States to sort of create this atmosphere. And they themselves started in Hindu terror thing in India with false arrests and so on. And WikiLeaks had a conversation of Rahul Gandhi, who had paid a visit to the US embassy. And there he spoke to an embassy official, not ambassador, but much a junior rank. He spoke to him and said that we have come to the conclusion that the Hindu terror is more dangerous than Lakshadweep. And it was proved later on, because anything that happened, they blamed Hindu in it. They selected people from various important walks of life. For instance, there was a lieutenant colonel who was a brilliant officer, young man, who actually was helping the country to understand Islamic terror and infiltration in India. And he had done extremely good work. And he was targeted, beaten, thrashed, and attempt was made for him to give a false confession. But he stood his ground. And so that we thought was a kind of an isolated incident, but it wasn't. And he still, even in Narendra Modi's government, the cases have not been withdrawn. Of course, he'll win it because there's nothing in the case. So, but he has to still go through that unnecessary process of finding it in court. Then Sadhvi Pragya, who is now a member of parliament, she was a Sadhvi, and she was stripped and beaten. They did all kinds of vulgar things with her. And of course, because we came to power, she was able to come out. And the process had begun within India. And ironically, the anti-Hindutva movement that I see is not so much in the raw masses who don't like Indians because they look different and so on. They're mobs, so to speak, that you have in the United States. But they seem to have really sprouted in the universities. It's in Oxford, it's in Cambridge. And any student who comes from India is absolutely, even if he's the most brilliant student, but if he has these views, then they start targeting him. And ultimately, he or she has to run away. So this process started. And in America, the same time, we saw a new phenomenon and most welcome phenomenon of Rajiv Malhotra, who was not an academic. He was a very successful person in the corporate world, and particularly in telecom. And he rose to very great heights in the company. There was a famous American company. And at the age of 46, 44 or something, he resigned and decided to dedicate writing books. He written books and books. And that's hurting the academics, because the academics had a point of view which they were projecting in the courses. And here's a man who was, he was not doing much in universities. They weren't inviting him or they were blocking him. But he did it. But in wherever he held general meetings or in the university campus, or when the students had invited him, you would find some professor would go there and start to disturbing him and distorting what he says. So I would say the first thing is the objective that is being adopted against the Hindus is to put a stereotype which the British had started, and the British did it very crudely. This is a much more sophisticated thing. They write theses, they write books and so on. And of course, the bottom line is the same. The bottom line is that India is not one country. It is multiple races and Aryans, Dravidians, and all that nonsense that has been now discarded by modern science. But it was there. So Hindutva being the essence of Hindutva, the essence of Hinduism in the sense that when you were following the principles of Hindutva, you are actually, what you are doing is translating the principles of Hinduism into real life. How you behave with your parents, how you behave with your wife, how the children behave with their parents. what is the what we call a shishtachar, how you deal with the issues, how you worship. So many things, you see. And the Hindus have a special way. And most troublesome was that the Hindus actually formally believe that all religions lead to God. So there's no clash on that. There's no clash that, you know, like the Christians and the Muslims say, my way or the highway. And if you don't accept my way, and if they are in majority, then they will persecute you. That's what we have been noticing in Spain, and we have been noticing in the Latin American countries, and of course in the Islamic countries. Very difficult for people who are not of their religion, their majority religion, they suffer. So, but the Hindu is not like that. It has no status. And there was a period when in India, from India, the yoga, meditation, all these things started going, and people began accepting it. There was a kind of a fear that is this going to swamp us? And in fact, I don't know any of you would ever remember. Some of you are too young to remember, I think. Newsweek in, 2009, had the editor, a lady called Miller or something, who wrote a huge article in Newsweek that now we are all Hindus. And I myself was shocked by that article, seeing it is the title. There were film actresses like Julia Roberts, who went to India, converted, then converted her husband, converted her children, and even today she is visiting regularly the temples in California. So, I mean, you're getting more and more. And then our sadhus started going, they started holding sessions, and, you know, big temples started coming in different parts of the country. And that's when some force, I don't know which force, because not the average American, some force began to feel that on one side, people like Rajiv Malhotra, then the other side, all these sadhus and so on. So in a number of dimensions, the Hindu idea, which is very attractive. Actually, if you see the Hindu idea, it is extremely modern. All religions lead to God. We don't have a book. We don't have a church or a masjid, Makkah, like Makkah. Or we don't have a son of God. We are of the view that, you know, so many ways of reaching Hinduism, but these are the core concepts. And these core concepts are, you know, I don't want to get into it, it will take a lot of time, but I would say that these core concepts are extremely, very scientific, very well-based, argued, so on. Shankaracharya, in India, we used to have a system called Shastra. That means you never use force to convert somebody to your way of living, your point of view. You use what we call as the Shastra, which means debate. And Shankaracharya, in fact, when he found that India had become Buddhist, and it became the Hinayana Buddhist, which was very, very strict Buddhism and very exclusive. So he went walking from Kerala all the way to Kashmir. And everywhere he stopped and found the leading Buddhist scholar there and said, let's have a debate. If I lose, I will become a Buddhist. If you lose, you become a Sanatani Hindu. Or if you can understand the Advaita Hinduism that I practice. Advaita Hinduism is philosophically a very, very sophisticated one, and it's not easy for in the beginning to become a Sanatani, to become an Advaita Hindu. So Shankaracharya went all over. In fact, the first Shingeri Acharya who was appointed was a Buddhist, Mandana Mishra. And Mandana Mishra debated him, and people said, well, Mandana Mishra is the greatest Buddhist scholar. Uttara Mimamsa school, and Shankaracharya is the greatest Hindu scholar today. And who will be the umpire? So Mandana Mishra said, my wife knows all this theology very well, and she will be the umpire. Now, see, here again, this is Hindu, the real Hinduism, which we have forgotten due to all these invasions and so on. Women played a major role in the intellectual progress of India. And I tell people, Brahma appointed three important portfolios, and they're all three to women. Defense went to Durga, finance went to Lakshmi, and education went to Saraswati. And there are no male gods who have got any portfolios, you see. And so when we worship, like we do Durga Puja, we do Saraswati Puja, and of course we do Lakshmi Puja. So there's no feeling that, you know, this is, she's a woman, you know, there's no gender feeling at all in Hindus. So I'm saying that people in the intellectuals in India, in America and Britain and Germany, these are the principal countries, came to realize that if there was this free play given to Hindus, then what will happen is that the people will become what the editor Miller had said in Newsweek, that we'll all become Hindus. And why she said it? She said people will say, look, say Hindus burn their dead bodies. We bury them. Look at the amount of waste of land that takes place, because the most prime waste of prime land in which graves are made, you can see it in New York. If you're traveling from John F. Kennedy Airport to Manhattan, you'll see huge areas of only graves, and who looks after them? You know, you have to look after them. If you have a grave, you have to look after them. So she said that similarly, you know, it doesn't require you to believe one particular dogma in the even if it's against your common sense, you can take an independent position. So, and I mean, she has listed the things which make her say that now we are all becoming Hindus. And of course, Julia Roberts, the famous film actress, I think she's got a large number of Oscars and all that. She also, after becoming Hindu, explained why she became Hindu. So I think today what we are seeing in universities, in various other places, and I might also add, Indians are doing very well when they go. They are not, go to these countries. Even if somebody goes and becomes a motor mechanic, soon he becomes an automobile engineer. So the Indians are rising. Today, Microsoft is headed by an Indian. Google is headed by Indian. You know, you find Indians coming from India. They are holding very high positions. And I hate to say it, but I would say that bulk of them happen to be Hindus. And that is where the second strand comes, that Pakistan, some hostile Islamic countries, they are also now organizing these hate Hindu moves. And they want no sadhu sannyasi to come and teach yoga or our religion and so on. So we are in a situation where the objectives becomes how do they implement this objective of making people dislike Hinduism and not like it, which if it is presented from its pure Hindu point of view, it becomes very attractive for every rational person. So the first thing I've noticed is that they are now portraying history in the history books. And now Indians there, particularly the Hindus, they're putting away a huge fight in courts and all. But it's an uphill battle. They, in the in the history books, in the research papers, and so on, what they are essentially saying is that India has been a losing country. And it's a country of people coming, invading, taking it over, and then, you know, creating some mixture of population. That kind of thing. It's not that this is an original civilization. It was there before. And the truthful history is that India is the only country which defeated all foreigners, whoever came. They took time. There was a, you know, there was, because in India was at that time, you know, very few internal squabbles they used to have, because everything used to be argued out, and through argument it was ended. So when the Muslims came with their brutal force, they lasted quite a long before we could remove them. Sometimes the Muslims whom I know personally argue with me, saying, no, how can you say that? I said, all right, tell me one thing. Today, if I go to Udaipur, I can tell who the descendant of Rana Pratap is. If I go to Maharashtra, I can say who is the descendant of Shiva. Can you tell me who the descendant of Aurangzeb? There's no descendant of the Mughals anywhere, or Ghori, or Ghazni. You see, they all disappeared. Because the great Hindu movement has digested them, has taken them, won them over at some stage, and perhaps converted. In fact, if it weren't for the British, we would have perhaps converted all the Muslims by the time another 100 years had passed, which unfortunately passed under the tutelage of the British. And therefore, the first thing they did was to start propagating our distorted history in the American universities, English universities, anywhere doing it earlier, German universities, and so on. And there it is to demean India. It's mostly demeaning. They put Shiva's pictures in almost despicable way, show our goddesses underclad, and all that kind of thing at various levels. So this creates an hatred. And they are, I've called them opponents in my title, but they are really basically hostile enemies, you see. So this is one aspect that the distorting history to show that we are a conquered race, we have never been able to rule ourselves. Somebody has to come from outside to rule us and put us together. There was no such thing as a united India. For instance, these DMK fellows and nutcases are saying there's the word Hindu was given by the British. I mean, there's some cinema actor who has stopped acting in cinema, unfortunately, has got into politics. And he gave a press conference saying the word Hindu is which the British created. There's no word in before it was. We had different titles, either a Shaivite or a Vishnavite, and so on. So, but in our scriptures, you see Hindu has been defined as not people saying Sindhu River has been, the Greeks could not say sir, they used to say her, and the Zoroastrians also used to say her for sir, and therefore Sindhu became Hindu. All nonsense, you see. In the many of our Sanskrit literature, they describe that Himalaya he and Indu Sagar Indu. That is what connects us as Hindu. So Hindu came as a regional term because we were 100% Hindu anyway. All our religion that time was only one. In those ancient days. And so Hindu came that way. But here it is now going on, propaganda is going on, and our people are picking up like these DMK types who don't read, they only see cinemas and they don't read at all. So I'm saying we are not at a war today of weapons. We are here in a war of ideas. How to, distort your thing and bring your country to not to fall prey to the brilliance of Indian minds and things like that, or fall for yoga or yoga for meditation and so on, which they were. So this is one. They're always invaded. People, you know, they're all useless. They are multi-races. Somebody is from Africa. Somebody is from here. It's all nonsense, because DNA studies have shown that we are all the same without any Varna, this thing, that thing, all divisions. In spite of that, the DNA study says that we are one people. Then so the second point I wanted to make, which I've now just elaborated, the second point is that Indians are not one people. They are based on caste. Somebody is this caste, somebody is that caste. First of all, there's no such thing as caste. I don't know what caste is in our day. We have Varna and Jati. And Varna is according to your occupation. If you are a scholar and you know you are a Gyani, Tyagi, Sahasi, then you are called a Brahmin. Doesn't matter where you are born. In fact, everybody is born a Shudra according to our scriptures. Only after he selects his profession, he'll be called a Brahmin, Kshatriya, etc. So Brahmin is a Gyani, Tyagi. And this is not my research. It's there in the Gita. In three different places, in three different chapters, Krishna explains to and tells him that his duty as a Kshatriya, what it is, and why he should stand up and fight. So in that context, he says, this is what the Brahmins, this is what makes a Brahmin, this is what makes a Kshatriya. You are a Kshatriya, so you better have to fight. And then the Vaishya community, and then the Shudra community. This scheduled caste was a very, very, very small group of people who were expelled from the society for some wrong they did. But their children were not. For example, Valmiki. Valmiki was born of scheduled caste parents. But he became a Maharishi, although he started off as a Dakait and all that. But later on, he recited Ram's name and suddenly became a Maharishi. So this is same thing with Vedavyasa. His mother was a fisherwoman, but he became a Maharishi. Vishwamitra was born in a Kshatriya family, but he became a Maharishi because they were all Gyanis, Tyagis and Sahasis. Sahasi means a courageous man, Nirdar. So this was the thing. But they say, no, this is all racial. Brahmins are come from Europe and Shudras are come from Africa and all this nonsense. Of course, all the DNA studies now have demolished that. And but they will not accept that. They will, if you tell them, no. Their own Houston University has done the research on DNA and said this same thing. I want to tell you one thing in a side thing. There is a school in England called St. James School. And you can get this in Google if you go to Google and write St. James School. There, the principal, who's a white, it's an elite white people's school. There, the principal has laid down that all students from the age of 6 to 11 every morning will recite shlokas from our scriptures, Hindu scriptures. And you can go to Google and type St. James School and Sanskrit, or you can say Hindu religion, all that. Now, just now when the king was coronated, this Charles, there was a group from that school, and it came on TV. I don't know how many people noticed it even, but it came on TV. That school recited shlokas about his taking over the responsibility of the country. And so England, I don't know how they people there. Of course, we know now that the anti-Hindu elements are not a big majority. They're small here, there, everywhere. I have somehow have a feeling that many of them are financed by those countries which are hostile to India. And I don't need to name them. Of course, the Islamic organizations in the United States, they spend a lot of money, sort of criticizing Hindus and Hindu religion and so on. And I won't be surprised if some of them also supported and financed American academicians. So what it all comes down to is that to create a clash of civilizations. Now, originally the concept was that Christians and Hindus will combine against Islam. But now they are the new version of clash of civilization is that the Christians and the Muslims will combine against the Hindus to prevent them from intellectually swamping the West. Now, many of these hardliners against Hindus call themselves Ambedkarites. Well, they haven't read anything about Ambedkar. Ambedkar was a great scholar. Jawaharlal Nehru may be called a Brahmin, but he was not a great scholar. Even not a scholar. I don't think he passed his exam. He got some gentleman pass degree, which those days they used to give to students coming from colonial areas. So, but Ambedkar got a PhD in economics from Columbia University. And then he, while he was studying for economics, he wrote a thesis about the beauty of India and its uniqueness and its unity. It's there in one of my books, Hindu Renaissance, Hindutva and National Renaissance, which was published by Haranand. I've quoted that paper is available in the Ambedkar Library in Delhi. And he was absolutely very, very prudent. He originally started by saying the Hindus, Buddhists, Jains, and Sikhs. They are all Hindus because they are born. Their religion was born in India. And we found that in many places where he has written. And in fact, the constitution, which Ambedkar had piloted, includes, if you go to Article 25, fundamental right to preach a religion, subsection of that article, Article 25, it says, by the term Hindu is meant not only Hindu, but not only Sanatana Dharmi, but Buddhists, Christians, and Sikhs. It's there in the constitution. And nobody has ever protested. They said, no, we are not. All these Ambedkarites should ask, go and tell the Congress party to delete this. But it's there in the constitution. Now, therefore, Hindu is a umbrella religion, in the sense that it includes all these various paths. All paths lead to God, but they are by different names. And so I would now like to go to the second point, which is the strategy that they have used. The strategy is, of course, basically to put Hindus against Christians and Muslims. And then I find that the Muslim scholars are far more vituperative than the Christian scholars, but they're all against. The way they target Rajiv Malhotra, for instance, every time he holds a seminar, somebody will go and ask some ridiculous stuff and try to disturb the meeting. So this is their strategy. And this strategy is being used in order to show that the Hindus can't defend themselves. Hindus have no history of their own, so they can't present it to us. Because we are, people are not educated, we are still undergoing the British system, and we are not learning. That's why when I started with your help of all the people here today on television, the Naveen Hindustan Foundation and VHS, Virat Hindustan Sangam, it was because we thought that instead of demonstrating and showing our strength, we educate our people. And so all our sessions are of that kind of education. So what I would say is that their objectives are clear to rubbish Hindus, and their strategy is also clear by taking all this history and our practices and so on and so forth. They make out that we're all anti-women, but we worship women. When all the male gods could not kill the demon, they had to go to Parvati and say, please come in your Ugra Rupa and finish this. And so she became Kali and killed him. So these kinds of rubbish that they put on, now people also don't know. So I would say the remedy would be, and I'll conclude with that. First of all, I'm sorry to say that Narendra Modi government has miserably failed in rewriting the history books. It was a part of our manifesto, and this is the easiest thing to do. They could have made Rajiv Malhotra as chairman of the committee, but all the bureaucrats didn't want him because he will not listen to bureaucrats. He knows 10 times or 100 times more than all of them. So they didn't let him. They have not set up a committee, and whatever books have been published, these drafts which have come, all have been rejected. And so we have to do it again. So rewrite the books, history book about the true history of India. That we are one nation, continuing civilization, and one people, didn't come from anywhere else. And of one DNA. So there may be people here and there. I mean, Rahul Gandhi is not 100% Hindu DNA because, you know, his mother is an Italian. So, I mean, there may be here and there like that. But the 99% of Indians have the same DNA. Even the Muslims in India have the same DNA. And if all this hatred had not been there, by now they would all have come back to become Hindus, which were what their ancestors are. All Muslims in India, their ancestors are Hindus, and privately they admit to me also, but they will not say it publicly because of it. Next is secondly that we must say that equality of men and women is for all communities. And you cannot say that you have equality only in Hindu laws, but in every other religion there must be equality, and that must be enforced, because we are not a theocratic society, we are not a Hindu nation, but we are culturally Hindu in our practices. So therefore, that, I say, it is known to everybody. India was partitioned, and Muslims were told that if you think your identity is separate from Hindus, then you go to this new part called Pakistan. And those who stayed, their understanding was that they would stay as brothers and sisters of Hindus, which is what the DNA also says. So now, we should also resist certain differences which create bad perception. Hijab. Now, I'm not saying you don't wear a hijab. You wear a hijab as much as you like. After all, so many Indians are wearing shirt and pant. I'm not saying that you can't wear it because the British wore shirt and pant. I don't do, but many do. In politics also, many do. But that's not important. But if in the school there is a uniform, then you must abide by the uniform. You can't say, no, exception should be made for me to wear hijab. I'm happy that they, at least the High Court of Karnataka has decided that. And I hope the Supreme Court will soon decide that too. So, whatever, it's a marriage. You know, you can't have four wives. You have to have only one. You can't have if your father dies, give six times to the male child, and only one sixth will be to the girl. You can't do that. And same thing with parda and so on and so forth. And talaq, of course, we have removed, but we have still not standardized it fully. I would say, if somebody asked me in the conclusion that how to become a genuine Hindu, I would say just do one thing. If you have time, that is, or if you are going to school where there is an option, or college there is an option, learn Sanskrit. Sanskrit is there in the constitution also, that over the years, Hindi should go on using Sanskrit words till it becomes Sanskrit. And our concept was that the India's link language will be Sanskrit, which it was. And the British made it clear. Macaulay says it. Please read his speech he made to the Parliament of Britain, where he said, I don't consider one shelf of British library has more literature than all the literature of India in Sanskrit. And therefore, it should be burnt. And it was burnt. How many books? It's not only the Muslims who burnt it. So, I would say to all parents, please see and persuade your children, while they can go and play cricket also, but they must learn Sanskrit. And Sanskrit is easy to learn. Every language of India has Sanskrit words. Tamil has 40% Sanskrit words. I have told many people, Karunanidhi one day argued with me, no, we are different people, we are Dravidians. Dravidians, by the way, is a concept given by Shankaracharya. And that concept was that where Travid, which means where the three oceans meet, or the three coastlines meet. And so Travid became Dravid. And now you can't say that they are non-Brahmins, because we had a cricketer called Rahul Dravid. He was a Pakka Brahmin. I mean, in the terms of identification that we use nowadays, and Karunanidhi uses. So I would say that this oneness can only be created by learning Sanskrit, and Sanskrit should be a compulsory language. This is the way to fight. You can't say that our government should call up the other government and so on. No, you just ignore them. If there's a physical assault, then of course the local police. And if the local police doesn't come, well, this is the country you chose. So, you put up with it and start going to your congressman and so on and so forth and making an issue of it. But once you unite on Sanskrit, you'll see there's a new unity that will come amongst the Indians of India, or India, or the Hindus in the larger sense. Our DNA studies all show that we are one people, so there's no difference in my mind. And that is the way to answer, because all these books written in the West and all will disappear once the Hindus demonstrate that they are in fact one people. Okay, over to you, Jagdish.
So, Dr. Swami, couple of quick observations from my side. The so-called the South Indian idiot in the film industry, a bunch of idiots who not even passed the fifth class, they come and talk about Hinduism. So basically, they can't read history. So for them, the history starts and ends with whoever writes the dialogue, right? For them, that's what it is. At the end of the day, they don't know anything beyond whatever they know. They're just basically slaves of the British. But Dr. Swami, if you see history, when the East India Company came here in the 1600s, there was a person called Charles Stewart who came here in 1777. You know what he called himself? He called himself a Hindu Stewart. So how did the British give the word Hinduism? When that guy who was in 1777, he has a tomb in Calcutta that is built like a temple. He called himself a Hindu steward. And it is etched. This is there in the British Museum today. They have this picture in the British Museum from 1777. This guy went there when he was 19. He went there and he said the missionaries are evil people. They should not be converting Hindus. So the word Hinduism, the so-called idiots like Kamala Hassan who claimed that was given by the British, don't even know history. Leave alone Hindu. And as you said, Adi Shankara, when he propagated, when he started moving along, when he propagated and brought religions together, he established there are six parts. What we call Shanmata. Basically, it's people who worship Lord Muruga, Kartikeya, Ganesha, Shiva, Vishnu, Devi, and Surya. This is what he said. This is the six basic tenets. And this is also captured in our Vedas, saying that these are the six parts of it. It's just an umbrella term. Hinduism exists, does not exist. It came only after the British. It's all nonsensical. And you've said so many times that the Chinese, thousands of years ago, called us Hindus, right? They didn't know anything else.
Hindu. They don't have H, so they say Hindu.
Hindu. So, all these idiots who have no clue as to their history, they can't even know beyond what they had for a drink yesterday. They claim to be, you know, harbingers of history today. And sadly, you know, even the Muslims, before they came, they called this as Hindustan.
Yeah.
Before the British, they called this as Hindustan. Yeah. So, what happens then? So, why don't these people realize and continue to... they have a strategy, Dr. Swami, this is my theory. They tried to invade India and convert India, the Hindus, either to complete all Muslims or all Christian. They failed militarily. Now they are trying to destroy our culture, do a divide and conquer. As far as Tamil Nadu is concerned, the Dravidian parties and the idiots inside those organizations have come to a realization that atheism is a dead concept. They've tried atheism for a long time. Didn't work. In fact, people are going to temples more than what they are today. So they said, okay, now we will abandon atheism. Let's jump in and say there is no Hinduism and start divide and conquer all these things. So we'll split them, Shaivam, Vaishnavism, this and that. And they only know Shaivam, Vaishnavism. Can they not name the other thing? Kaumaram is one of the largest sects in Tamil Nadu who worship Lord Muruga. They don't even know that. So now their strategy is divide and conquer. So how can... my question, based on all of this, Dr. Amin, is there something that can be done to put these guys in their place, saying that, you know what, propagating such things is basically hate speech. And you're dividing, you're creating a divide among the people and creating hate among people. Is this something a possibility?
Okay. You want to know whether...
Legally,
it's... if this is when our own politicians don't know these matters that we have discussed today, I don't think you can do anything legally, because who's going to implement it, who's going to pass it, how is it treated in parliament to become a law? What we need is a movement. And the movement has started. You see, today, when I was in school, I went to a convent school. I know what we used to think. Then when I came back from America, I knew what we were thinking. Today, there is there are very few people today who are willing to say, I'm not a Hindu. In fact, you hear all these ridiculous...
very much in America. I can say that without... A lot of people in America are doing that now. They don't want to call themselves.
They don't want to call themselves
Hindus. They're not proud to call themselves.
Yeah, because they're targeted, no? And nobody's there to tell them that this is the way to go forth. But here in India, there is a different opposite. A lot of people are willing to say, I'm a Hindu. Some say, I'm a Hindu, but I'm not a fanatic. They will add that. But the fact is, these are things which have to have as a movement. And more than that, the thing that the government can do is write the history books should reflect the truth. You must get it defalsified and the truth must be presented. Then I think the younger generation will be a factor in that.
Okay. Arvind ji, aap kuch puchna chahte?
Yeah, namaskar Dr. Swami. Aapne bahut vistar mein sara kuch varnan kiya hai. Jo hindutva virodhi shaktiyan hain, Bharat mein ya Bharat ke bahar, unki उनको रोकने के लिए या उनका प्रतिकार करने के लिए हमें क्या करना चाहिए. मेरा एक सबसे मूलभूत प्रश्न ये है, वी आर दी ओल्डेस्ट एंड डिस्पाइट ऑफ दैट फैक्ट वी आर ओनली अबाउट 1.2 बिलियन इन दिस वर्ल्ड. इंडिया, नेपाल, मे बी मॉरिशियस, आई मीन दीज आर थ्री कंट्रीज वेयर वी आर मोर देन 40% एज वेयर वी आर देयर जस्ट फॉर द shake of counting. But the question is, 8 lakhs Hindus get converted to either Islam or Christianity every year, and this number is increasing by about 2% every year. What are we doing? Why don't the Hindus and others do to prevent this, the migration from Hindu to other religion?
In India?
Everywhere. I mean, this is the estimated number. No. 8 lakhs.
I don't think this would be true in India.
This is true by research. This is true by, I can give you the source.
I like to see the research.
Yes.
I would say, in fact, which I don't want to say, but I will say it. There has been a lot of conversion. You see, every census, you find Christian population doesn't increase beyond 2%.
Right.
And yet we say, oh, Christians are converting everywhere. They're not successful. I don't know whether we have had that lady who reconverted from Christianity to Hinduism ever appear.
She appeared at a session, program. Esther. Esther.
She appeared with us. No?
Right.
She appeared in our program. Now, there are, I don't, this is not a play, so I don't want to even talk about it. If somebody wants to become a Hindu, he can become. You're not going to force anybody. But that he can become. And for that, you see, Mohan Bhagwat said, Varna system should be abolished. Only because of this. You cannot get Hindu people to become Hindus unless you remove this. And in fact, I know one place where Vishwendu Parishad that converted about 1,000 people, and they asked me to be present. And the first question all of them asked me is, which ponse jati amari hogi? I mean, they don't know the word varna. They said, jati ponse hogi amari. So, and then who will marry us? Who will marry our children? These are some of the things that people ask, and these are the things that we have to tell them, you are originally Hindu. You're just coming back. You're not converting. You're ghar vapsi, as we call it. And this ghar vapsi is what needs to be projected and make it acceptable also. Once you become, you're accepted.
Dr. Swami, I have a question. You touched upon it in some way. The question is, we are finding out what is the remedy. One of the remedies, I think, is those who are in power who swear by Hindutva should first realize or understand these objectives of our opponents. Because sitting in power for 9 years, much more could have been achieved. Oh, yeah. What do you think about that? Because, see, what has happened is we are quick to blame our opponents or people of other religion or Western powers for their vested interest to attack on Hindutva and what we stand for. But those who are sitting in power, what are they doing for our this thing? For example, there is a latest move, I am told, to give reservation for the converts who were originally Dalits. Now, the whole idea of the reservation for Dalits of the Hindu community was that because of the backwardness or whatever you call it of centuries old, whatever we may have done for them, we wanted them to overcome all that. And that was in the Hindu religion, as it was told. But now if they are changing religion and want this reservation also in their Christianity or the other religion, so indirectly they will be bonus for them. They want to convert on whether you say for money or for some lurement, and then you also give them reservation. Is it not our government which is short-sighted on these issues and strikes at the very philosophy of the Sangh Parivar on this issue? So I just wanted your comments on the general thing, government is not doing enough, and second is on this reservation for the converts.
Well, you know, I'm having a battle royal on things which the government can undo in 5 minutes. For example, the Modi's government had ordered the chief minister of Uttaranchal to nationalize all the Chardham temples. I mean, even the hoary ones of Badrinath and Kedarnath were nationalized. I had to go to court, and in the court, high court, I could, you know, there was such tension. Yeah, I don't even know whether this tension was being felt by the judges or not. But the judge ultimately did what was essentially a knockout blow. He said that the treasury of the temples will remain with the pujaris. And it was nationalized only to get the treasury. So then the next thing that happened is when I went to the Supreme Court, they knew they were going to lose. So they withdrew that thing. So Ram Setu, I mean, for 8 years or 9 years, I've been fighting that. Of course, I won the major fight, even in the UPA time, I won it, that they cannot touch Ram Setu. And it was reaffirmed by Gadkari in Parliament that we will not touch Ram Setu for the Setu Samudram project. But to declare it as a national heritage monument so that it's looked after, so people can walk on it, go from Rameshwaram to where Sita was kept as a prisoner, the government is fighting me tooth and nail in Supreme Court. So I would say that I would not worry about what the government is doing and not doing. I would say let the people rise, and automatically the government will have to ultimately come around. But don't depend that just because you have your own government, they're going to do what you want, because I think they have other ideas on how to go about governing the country. And they have done this. They've even on that case, although I know nothing about that lady, what's her name, Nupur, Sharma.
Nupur Sharma, Nupur, yeah.
The minister, not minister, the ambassador to Qatar says that she's a fringe element. Now, she's a spokesman, one of the spokesmen of the party. Whether what I think of her is irrelevant. But I would say, how can a diplomat, ambassador, say that she's a fringe element just because she said something which I believe was straight out of what is there in the Hadith itself? She pulled it out of Hadith, and it's not something that she invented of her own. But I think this shows the mindset that we have today. And I do think that there are many countries who are disturbed that we prefer dictatorships to democracies in our alignment. So there's so many things that are on. So I would say let us connect straight with God and do it for Him, and He will find you a way to make you succeed.
Dr. Swami, one particular section which is largely Hindu-phobic is in India called secular. Those who call themselves secular, and this element or this class has about 50% or more than 50% who are born Hindus. So how to counter these fake Hindus who call themselves as secular and they are actually Hindu-phobic?
Well, you know, first of all, let me tell you that the word secular did not exist in the constitution at all. Because we have said in the constitution that faith is universal, it's all religions lead to God, which is the Hindu concept, sarva dharma samabhav. And therefore, the word secular was not necessary. This was voted in the Constituent Assembly, not once, but thrice. Right. And thrice, Ambedkar led the attack and removed it. And socialism also was voted out. And during the emergency, Mrs. Gandhi has brought it. Now, I've been, of course, now I've got a court case, so I'll get it removed once it gets listed. I think there's also badmashi going on by the government to see it's not listed early. But it is totally illegal what the government, Indira Gandhi government did, to bring into the preamble, which cannot be amended, two words, socialism and secularism. And secularism is a meaningless word for us, because we have always had the church and the king, which is the Martin Luther's definition of secularism, always had it. The Brahmins were not kings, and the Brahmins had their own arena, and the kings had their own arena. But in Europe, it was not like that. The king was the head of the church. And that difference, that division, that no, they are separate, was brought by Martin Luther in the name of secular. Otherwise, in normal English, secular means straight line. Nothing more than that. So I think in our country, all that you have complained about is absolutely true. But the fact is that it's part of our British education, and we have not undone it, because our curriculum is still the same as what the British left us with.
Okay, lastly, one small question. The section which has power to promote the anti-Hindu feelings is Bollywood. The Bollywood is basically anti-Hindu. It is patronized by 80% Hindus, but it is financed by 80% Muslims, and maybe sitting outside India.
Yeah, and Dubai.
Arvindji, go ahead. Sorry.
It is not only television, but even now the digital media, which is OTT, there are a lot of anti-Hindu plays and anti-Hindu dramas are being shown and publicized.
अरविंद जी ये तो बदल रहा है ना अभी बहुत सारे पिक्चर्स को बॉयकॉट हो रहे हैं ना लोगों को आई मीन देयर इज अ लॉट ऑफ मूवमेंट
आई ओनली आस्क यू वन क्वेश्चन व्हाई इज द इंफॉर्मेशन ब्रॉडकास्टिंग मिनिस्ट्री गिविंग व्हाट इज कॉल्ड व्हाट इज इट दैट क्लियरेंस कॉल्ड
सेंसर सर्टिफिकेट
व्हाई आर दे गिविंग इट दे शुड बी ऑल पुल्ड अप and said, how did you give it? How did you allow these scenes to be allowed in?
Right.
The mere fact that, Dr. Yeah. Swami, that you have to file a case for some producer trying to distort what is not old history. In Ram Setu case,
Ram Setu
it's not even some 100-year-old history. This is 5-year-old history they're trying to distort.
Dr. Swami, yeah. what do you say about the censor board? Our government stopped and tried to stop a movie against conversion being produced, yeah. And they was suggesting so many cuts to it. So those people who are sitting in power or on the censor board has no idea what to censor and what not to censor. They troubled the director and the producers of the movie. Censor conversion to such an extent, but ultimately the producers and directors succeeded, but they were portraying the evils of conversion while the government was looking at the other way around. So there are many such instances, they not been able to do anything, but on the contrary, if there is a popular Hindutva movie, they will see that it is blocked.
And Jagdish ji, just to add to that, in Delhi recently, the Aam Aadmi Party held a meeting and they denounced Hindus, they denounced Shiva and say, convert everybody to Buddhism.
No, that was not Aam Aadmi Party meeting, that was Buddhism meeting.
Buddhism meeting, okay. But why was the Aam Aadmi Party?
Aam Aadmi Party minister attended it.
Minister attended.
That's right. Yeah, agreed.
Okay, Arvind, we are run out of time.
No, Dr. Swami has to complete. Sorry, I interrupted him. Sorry, go ahead. Whatever Jagdish asked.
I'm telling you, based on my own political familiarity, which is now about 50 years, I would say we have come a long way. So let's not think that the Hindus are not, are been losing. In fact, I think today it's much more fashionable to say I'm a Hindu than when I was in school in the 50s. So let's take it forward, make it faster, change the history books. You will see there will be a complete change in the mentality of the younger generation.
Thank you, Dr. Swami.
Thank you, Dr. Swami. This subject is so wide that even if we continue identifying the Hindu-phobic elements and then how to counter each of them, maybe different strategy for different sections. And therefore, it will take a lot of time to cover everything. But what you have said, I think that is important, what you said in the end, that time is changing and we are progressing. We are inching towards our goal. And hum manzil pe jaake shighri manzil pe pahunchenge aur manzil pe pahunchne ke baad hi hum safal honge to hamara prayas jari rahe. Let us continue our efforts in this direction to counter these forces and adopt a strategy to how to stop them. Thank you, Dr. Swami, for enlightening us. Ramesh has something to say.
Yeah, I just said I think instead of the so-called Hindu party in the center not doing this, at least VHS is doing these things. So to our listeners, please join VHS. At least you will have some satisfaction that there's some organization that will fight for the, you know, cause of the Hindus.
Yeah, sure.
And also those other organizations, similar organizations who are working in this direction, they should also be appreciated. Dr. Swami has taken a lead for 8 years under his leadership. Virat Hindustan Sangam, not only in India, but in several countries outside India, has also been propagating the cause.
And we are not ashamed to call ourselves Hindustan Sangam. So
yes, educate and empower.
And I welcome Kamala Hassan also to join.
So thank you, Ramesh. Thank you, Jagdish. Thanks the technical team led by Ashish Shetty, Swaminathan, Gadgi Rakesh, Ishwar Iyer, Tejas, Navalgul, and Vishal Mehta, Najesh. We will be meeting next Sunday again, 8 p.m. with another topic and with Dr. Subramanian Swami. Till then, namaskar, Jai Hind.